Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller.
That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Us, I like you, like it or not. That's when it got wheels off.
Dwayne Betts is cool. Right? There's no two ways about it. I mean, he's rock and roll royalty. He has jammed with the greatest musicians in the world. He's a hotshot guitarist. He looks like some cool badass star of like a Western movie. He has like a real sly, kind of laid back quality about him that makes him seem like he could be, I don't know, movie star, pro athlete. He's just cool. So I really enjoyed getting to talk to him because in doing so, I discovered that even people that seem like they've got everything perfectly hooked up from the outside. People that look as cool as hell. People that come from the perfect pedigree, rock and roll lineage. They still deal with tricky, emotional terrain. Dwayne's got that. He's got a depth about him, and he's got a sweetness about him. And yeah, he is cool, but he's not cool in the sense that he's icy. Far from it. He's got a great deal of warmth about him, and I think it comes through in the conversation that we have. He's got a new record out with the Almond Betts Band. It's great. Since we spoke, I've dug into it. It's awesome. I mean, he's the real deal. And so it was really beneficial for me, honestly, to get to hear how he navigates that tricky emotional terrain and to hear his thoughts on dealing with the world's current situation, we as artists, and I don't know, just kind of living in the moment. Anyway, I hope you really enjoy, as much as I did having this conversation, I hope you really enjoy listening to this conversation. So please welcome to Wheels Off, Dwayne Betts. Howdy, y'all. Welcome to Wheels Off. We welcome as our guest today, Dwayne Betts. How are you?
Man, I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, that's so cool. So tell me, what creative project are you working on right now? And how does it light you up?
Well, I'm in a band called the Almond Betts Band with Devin Almond, who's Greg's son, for those of you that don't know. But we just released our second record called Bless Your Heart. recorded it down at Muscle Shoals Sound Studio with Matt Ross Spang, produced from Memphis, who's great. He's really a sweet, sweet guy and just a blast to work with. And yeah, that came out like a week and a half ago. So we're just, you know, we're just excited and looking forward to playing the tunes live again, you know, when we can get out there safely. And yeah, I mean, the writing process was really fun for it. It was kind of on the road in the dressing rooms and just kind of compiled some stuff and, you know, ended up with what we ended up with, you know.
So you guys wrapped it like right before the pandemic hit, I'm guessing?
Yeah, we went in, let's see, I think we went in late in December. I think in mid-December we recorded. And we were only there for about a week. I mean, we basically recorded live like we did our first record, kind of the same approach, just kind of capturing performances, you know, in the room kind of thing. And it, you know, it worked the first time. So we kind of took that same approach the second time.
It seems like with y'all's kind of band, I mean, it's all about the live thing, right? Like it's so performance based.
Yeah. And it's a big band too. So we're not really producing the record. Like I'm not going in and doing like three different guitar parts. You know, if it was just me, I'd like to do that. And I enjoy doing that. I'd like to get better at it. Actually, I know people that are geniuses at it, but with this band, we kind of just bring the magic in there and hopefully capture that, you know, that lightning in the bottle, you know, with a live performance in the room. And it's difficult for me. I have a lot of trepidation about walking into a studio and pressing record and having headphones on and seeing like half of the drum kit and then expecting to get live takes on, you know, there's a song on the record called Savannah's Dream. It's an instrumental that I wrote that I think it clocks in just over 12 minutes. And that performance is completely live. You know, I didn't overdub any guitar, you know, my solo is probably 2.5 minutes long or roughly, but it's really cool to say, yeah, well, maybe I could do that better, or maybe I'll do it in 6 months when we're playing on stage, maybe it'll get to another point. But that was live, and that was like the fourth take, you know. There's something really amazing about that, as you know. But
well, yeah, right, because we live in a world where people can build perfection, you know, using Pro Tools or whatever.
Yeah.
And to be, but I do think that when you do that, and but I think
we went straight to 2-inch tape as well. I didn't say that.
Oh, either. My so, God.
Yeah, we did both of these records to tape, and it has that sound. And Matt, I don't know if you know him or if you're familiar with his work. He engineered the Jason Isbell stuff, and he produced Margo Price, and he worked on the Elvis Presley project recently. So he's amazing, but he's kind of the guy for that. And Devin knew him from Memphis and had the idea to call him, and I was elated, you know. I was like, yeah, let's do that. So
oh my God. And do you think it's funny, we just made our second record with Vance Powell, and I do believe that like the second time you work with somebody you can take it to the next level because you've kind of all figured out all the ground rules. Is that the kind of thing where you think you might wind up going back to the well? Was it that good of an experience?
I think, well, I mean, you want to stay with what works, but you also don't want to get stale, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like we did that twice. I mean, time will tell, but I don't know. We'll probably go to a different studio, I would say. I don't think we'll do the next one. But yeah, when you work with somebody and you're comfortable with them and you know the process, then you come back in. And also the studio, I mean, it was kind of more familiar, you know, it was like a homecoming.
Yeah.
Kind of, to come back there. Not that it was uncomfortable ever. I mean, it's if those walls could talk, but it's not an intimidating place, you know. So it's like, oh yeah, like Keith went in that bathroom and wrote Wild Horses and then came back out or whatever he was doing in there. But, you know, but it's not intimidating at all, but it definitely has that awe factor of like, wow, I can't believe like what happened in this little room, you know? So
does it drive you crazy when you finish a record, but then you have to wait, in this case, not 9 months, 8 months for it to to come out? How do you deal with that period?
Well, does it drive you crazy?
Huh, man. For me, it's usually 4 months, right? Like we turn it in, and then it used to be the long lead time was based on magazine lead time. Like if you wanted to get a feature in Vanity Fair, they had to know 4 months in advance, so they couldn't put the record out. Now I think it's based on the physical product. Well, like it takes that long to get.
Well, with this one, because of the pandemic, we would have pushed really hard to get it out early, as early as possible, because we would have been touring. But once all the touring was gone, there was no pressure to get it out quickly, because you almost want to push it back a little bit so that when you start touring again, it's not like a century after your record came out, you know? So,
oh my God.
I mean, it's all kind of new to me. I mean, I spent a lot of time, you know, I was in bands and I was playing with my dad, and I played with, you know, with Dawes for a while as a touring guitarist for a couple years. And I mean, I played with a lot of people, but I wasn't really, you know, I probably could have been doing more at certain times in my life. You know, I went through some kind of stagnant periods where I was struggling with addiction and whatever. I mean, that's never an excuse, but yeah, man, making these records lately has just been, it's a learning experience, really. I mean, but yeah, the cool thing was, is that we just released, and now touring is kind of, it's like phase 1A of touring, with the drive-ins and it's kind of starting to pick up at all, you know?
Yeah.
So it's exciting. Hopefully next year, I mean, we'll be able to play concerts again, you know, like regular concerts, but.
Yeah. I just got an email from my booking agent about dates in May. And I thought, God, that seems optimistic, but dude, I would do anything to play shows.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be done properly and, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I don't have any interest in going out and playing for, you know, 10,000 people huddled together, you know. I mean, cuz you can do that in certain places and they'll, you know what I mean? And
it's, yeah.
No, we'll pass on that, you know.
You're right, I misspoke. I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't risk the lives of thousands of people. You're right.
No, I know that you were trying that. I was just saying right now.
No,
everything. They're really being creative and proactive and coming up with some progressive ideas to do music, you know, and have people enjoy it. And as long as it's done that way, then yeah, we're all in, you know, because we don't want to sit around. I mean, we got to make a living. You know?
Yeah, it's yes. I mean, and especially, I mean, I've always thought of my band as being like a very live kind of band, but I think you guys, I mean, it's so about like the live show. It's the, you know, the performance. It's so performative, like the guitar work and the musicianship.
Yeah, that's a live thing for sure. So, yeah, we can't wait to get back out. We have a couple dates, actually. We have 3 dates next week in the Northeast, drive-in shows.
Yeah.
And we did a couple at the end of last month. So, something is better than nothing, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I'll keep an eye on that because it's such a weird... I ran into a woman the other day. I did one of the only shows I've done at this fancy resort up where I live. And because it's 5 minutes away from my house, I can drive up the mountain to the Mohonk Mountain House, which is incredibly expensive and she and all that.
Well, but where do you live?
New Paltz, New York, just outside, 90 minutes north of Manhattan. And so I went up there and I did a short little set of a lot of covers. Afterwards, there was a woman there named Leslie whose partner plays bass in Lynyrd Skynyrd right now.
Okay.
And she had a lot of thoughts about all this stuff. But the thing that stuck with me that she said was, we're kind of entering this phase where live music has become very elitist in a way, because like to see a live, you know, the tickets are going to be more expensive and fewer. And then, like, or you have to be at Mohonk Mountain House, which is $1,000 a night per person or something. So, yeah, that kind of makes me sad, because what we do has always been like the thing that brings all the people together.
Or with the drive-ins, it's actually per car, and the per person is way less. So if you sell, I mean, you might sell, oh, that sounds good, there's that many people, but it's like per person, it's way less. So it's like, oh, that's why they want us to sell more, because it's like way less money. That's on the other end of the spectrum from these kind of she kind of. Yeah. I haven't done many of those yet, but.
Well, I wouldn't recommend it as a business model.
I'll do anything, and as long as it's cool and it's safe, I'll play. No, I won't do anything.
But I know.
I love playing music. I grew up on tour, you know, with my dad. I was homeschooled through like eighth grade through high school, so I was kind of like traveling around with the big boys, you know, and started sitting in at a young age. So that's kind of. Kind of my bread and butter, you know, being on tour. I've always loved it.
So it's funny because I'm sure you wind up talking about this a lot, but it's something I ask everybody about, like the when they knew they were going to do what they do. And I imagine for you, it was probably pretty young. Was there a moment where you knew, or was it just always assumed? Was there an epiphany moment?
I wanted to be a drummer. I was a drummer when I was really young. I had, wow. There's guitars around. I had the guitar. My dad was moving my fingers. Here's this, you know, if you can get this finger there. And I just was like, this is hard, man. I don't like this. I want to play drums. So he got me a drum kit from some spare drums at his, you know, it was in the 80s when it was kind of downtime, you know, and he had a solo band and it wasn't in like the peak of his, you know, career, so to speak, but. So he went and got me some, made me like a little makeshift kit from some spare drums that his drummer wasn't using. And not that he couldn't afford to buy me a kit. I'm not implying that. But
he wasn't going crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's like, I have some drums, so I'll get, you know, I'll teach you how to play. And he showed me some beats, and he was pretty good back then. And then it just took off from there, and I just played to, you know, my Walkman with my tapes, and I was into like Iron Maiden, and I mean, I was like into The Who, I was into, you know, a bunch of different stuff, but I was playing a lot of loud drums with my Walkman on, you know, in elementary school.
Wow. You know?
And then I kind of switched over to guitar around 13. I kind of went back to it, and I was like, started picking up stuff and started noticing my ear was getting better, like as far as, oh, that changes in that other song. And then you recognize it when it's in another song. You're like, you already know it because you heard it on the other one and you learned that. So that's kind of how it started, you know.
I had a producer, John Bryan, explain to me once that the greatest foundational instrument for a kid to start with is drums. Drums and piano, because the rhythm is so strong in both. And that, I guess, creates such a foundation for everything melodic.
There's a lot of great guitarists that started out as drummers. So.
Well, God, there's nothing worse than a guitar player with bad rhythm. I mean, kill me.
Yeah.
I've been one.
Okay, so have I. Maybe.
So you brought up struggles with addiction. I'm 5 years sober this summer myself.
Oh, great.
Myself. Like, awesome. I don't know where you're at with all of that, but
almost four.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. See? Man.
Great minds think alike.
So actually, October, yeah, almost four, yeah.
Yeah.
I was getting it confused with my one-year wedding anniversary. I was like, oh, it's coming right up. Oh, no, that's my anniversary.
That's great.
So, yeah.
So I guess I always wonder with creative people, like the internal obstacles that we generate for ourselves and how, you know, how do we deal with them? How do we acknowledge them? How do we overcome them? And obviously the unhealthy ways are, you know, you wind up drinking or using or whatever. Yeah. I just wonder for you, like what it's like to sort of deal with the negative stuff you come up against within yourself.
Man, I mean, these days my life is so good that I know that the story in my head isn't true. Like I can wake up and I can go to bed feeling amazing and like so happy about everything. And I wake up and it's like, I have to start all over again. I have to like, I'm back at the bottom of the hill and I'm telling myself this story in my head and I have anxiety or I have this. And it's like, you got to get up and put one foot in front of the other. I mean, some days are literally like, I have to like say, you're kind of crazy. Your life is like really great. Like, you'll feel great in a couple hours. Just get up and do your thing. Like, but I mean, I try to go hiking a lot. That's what I've been doing during this off time. Once I get some exercise and I get out, and you know, I did some yoga yesterday. All that stuff is important, and just kind of understanding that what you tell yourself in your head isn't the truth, you know?
God, I love that. The idea of like having a conversation with yourself where you remind yourself how lucky you are. You remind yourself that this is something that you do. Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous. It's like I have these worries and I'm like, man, you have no problems. Really, you don't. And that's the problem is you don't, you know, I mean, I've had real problems and I'm sure I will. But like your problems are like there aren't any real problems. So like you're trying to find something to latch onto to like fix or something, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think everybody has that internal voice and they struggle with it. And it's just about that story that you tell yourself, you know, you got to quit believing it.
Have you found yourself able to write during this?
I was, yeah. That's part of the other problem is now it's not flowing like it was, so I'm pissed off about it. No, yeah, I had a couple months where I was here, and then I left to go down to California. We did a few things. We did a video in Joshua Tree and did a couple things, but yeah, it was really good. I was writing songs and just trying to get better, you know? I mean, songwriting is hard. I mean, I've written some songs and I don't know which ones are better than other ones. Or I mean, I guess that's a matter of opinion, but you just got to keep doing it. I mean, anybody that I talk to that is worth a shit just says to just keep writing. You know, you probably won't use, you know, 90% of them, but if you just keep doing it, don't be afraid if they're not as good as your hero, you know, your heroes. So yeah, I was able to write, and then I've been writing a little bit lately, but more ideas. I haven't really gotten deep into anything. It's kind of been a little idea here, a little idea there, and I just record them all, and you know.
Do you have a plan for the next record? I mean, obviously, the record came out a week ago, so I'm not pressuring you.
Well, yeah, you got to think ahead, though. Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. Devin and I are. He's really good with that next step, thinking two steps ahead, and he's kind of a really great organizer and he's a leader, you know, naturally. He kind of has that, and I think, you know, you can have multiple leaders in a band, you know, but his personality is real go-getter and assertive, you know, and that's a great thing. And I kind of balance that because I'm like really laid back and kind of unassuming, you know, but yeah, I mean, we talked about it and you know, you just don't force it. You know, it'd be great if we could get back in and do some more stuff and see what we get, you know. But God, I don't want to give too much away.
I know it's also weird right now too, right? Because you have a new record. You want to honor it. You want to go out and play it for people and give it its space, not rush in and make another new record and then this record suddenly.
Oh,
gets...
yeah. We don't want to cut it off. You know, if we had the songs, I mean, we'd probably go in sooner than later, but not necessarily rush it to release it, you know, because we had, you know, I mean, like everybody, I mean, we have all this touring that we didn't do this year that we're going to do next year, rescheduled stuff and blah, blah, blah. But you know, hopefully this record has legs. I feel like it'll carry us through for a while, you know.
God, I can't wait to hear it. What's your instrumental, Savannah?
Savannah's Dream.
Savannah's Dream.
Name of that one, yeah.
Oh my God, that's super.
It kind
exciting.
Of has an homage. I mean, it's very, very much influenced by something my father would write. You know, I didn't make any. I didn't try to disguise that or hide from that. But it's very unique, as well. And I think it stands up nicely. And the fans, I mean, the people. You know, really like it a lot. So we've got some good comments. So, I mean, that always makes you feel good. You just put something out and you hope somebody likes it, right? I mean, I don't know.
I know. The validation can be really tricky, right? It's you don't want to depend on it too much, but it's...
No, you don't want to depend on on like... Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I'd be lying if I said I didn't want some sort of validation that it doesn't suck, though. I mean, somebody should say they like it, I hope. But no, I guess my fear is like if we're going to play one of the, you know, if we're playing for an hour and 45 or 2 hours and we throw in a couple Allman Brothers songs, you know, to tip the hat, you know, obviously that's a lot different. We're not going to get out there and play eight, you know, Allman Brothers songs, but you know, we might play a John Prine song or whoever, you know, or a Prince song or whatever. But then we might throw a couple of our folks songs in there. But if we're playing like Jessica one night and then maybe a week later we play Elizabeth Reed, I guess my fear is like, well, those are masterpieces. So I'm going to write an instrumental and they're going to want to hear it like live for 12 minutes when they could hear Liz Reed or Jessica, you know?
Oh,
and that's where that thing, but then the thing is that they, everybody was like, wow, this is going to be amazing live. We can't wait to see you guys play this live. So that's the validation that, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that kind of validation. You know, I'm like, oh man, they do want to hear us play this 12-minute instrumental. You know what I mean? It isn't, you know, so all that stuff is fun and games, you know?
God, have you done any online shows? Have you tried any of that stuff?
As far as a full band, work with our friends, have this thing, my friend Cisco Adler, I don't know if you know him, and Donovan Frankenreiter, I'm sure you know who he is. They kind of partnered up on this thing called No Cap, which is short for like No Capacity.
Yeah.
And it's just a live stream. It's an app and you mirror it to your TV, watch it on your computer, blah, blah, blah. But it's really well done. The sound's great. It's by like three multiple cameras. It's really cool. So we did two of those so far. We're trying to do like one a month. The next one's going to be a little different. We might do like I'm not sure yet, but we're going to switch it up a little bit for the next one. Maybe have a multiple theme, like multiple shows and have it be like a package deal that you can buy.
And but, you were able to be in one place for that?
The band? Oh yeah. We're all, yeah, like that was when we filmed the video for Pale Horse Rider. We did the taping for, we actually did CBS This Morning, Saturday Sessions, which is really cool.
Yeah,
they have a lot of cool bands, artists. So we got that. So that was like, okay, well, we have to all get together for that. So that was like, well, then we can knock out the video in Joshua Tree and we can do a No Cap show. And so we did all of that from the No Cap show and the CBS thing we did live at the Belly Up. No people, you know, in Solana Beach. So, and Devin has been doing live streams from he was prior to us starting to play again, just to support our crew, just to raise money for our crew and stuff. So he was doing, I mean, for a minute there, he was doing like 2 or 3 times a week, and God bless him for it, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't do, I pretty much just I'll record a song on my Instagram every now and then, you know.
Yeah.
Put that out there and see what people say about that.
So finally, I always feel like this question is cliche, but I always end up getting such great answers from asking folks this. If you were to meet a 21-year-old version of yourself, but working in today's world, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to say I regret anything with the addiction stuff, because that made me where I am and I'm sitting. I kind of feel like I'm a late bloomer. I've always been a late bloomer. So I'm right on time. I feel like I'm really in this band, and me and everybody in the band is like really coming into their own. So I wouldn't say to like, well, I wish I'd never done this or wishing that. But I would definitely tell myself to really, something my dad told me, like about the writing, like really work on the writing, you know, the craft. Like, don't just wait. Well, every now and then something will come to me, you know, like really pick up the guitar every day and work on it. But I was I was all over the place, you know what I mean? You could have just blown me into a place, and as long as there was a guitar and an amp that worked that had tubes in it, and I didn't even need a pair of shoes, I'd do the gig and it would be fine. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really care at a certain point. I was like, I've always loved playing music, but my priorities were kind of a little off target. I mean, I think that's a fair assessment of where I was at for some of those years, you know, but yeah, man, writing. I mean, I wish maybe I would say, hey, man, whatever you do, write, like try to write like all the time. If nothing comes, just don't get mad. Just pick up the guitar the next day, you know.
God, I could not agree with that more. That's the tagline of these of this podcast is create every day. That's the main thing I want
to. I mean, even if you just pick up the guitar in your playing, you're creating. You know, you don't have to. Like today, I picked it up and I just feel better. Yeah. When I move and my mind, and it's just, you know. So, you know, I have my coffee, and sometimes the coffee wigs me out, and then I get anxiety, but I'm too tired if I don't have the coffee, and then I'm like, okay, well, now I need to take a bath, or like, I need to shower. I mean, yeah, a little, maybe I'm a little neurotic sometimes.
I love the way that you're thinking of solutions, though. It's like, that's great. Oh yeah. Man, it's so great. Well, I've got to say, I really love talking to you. I feel like you're very generous with your insights, and it's cool to meet you. I look forward to
it. Yeah, and it's really good to meet you too. And I heard you on the radio. I was listening to Outlaw, and you were doing your show on there yesterday or something like that.
So, sitting right here in my office.
Yeah.
The music.
Yeah, man.
Well, thank you so much, Dwayne. Thanks for being on.
Thank you so much. Look forward to doing some shows or running into you out there on the path to happiness.
Well, your lips to God's ears.
Yeah.
Take care,
man. All right, man.
Bye.
Peace.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today, such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.